I was recently with a couple who had helped an octogenarian parent move out of the home that she had occupied for decades. And as the daughter was going through this home, days and days and days of going through this home, she learned at least one thing. And that was that her mother was a collector. A collector of many things, and among them, the shampoos and the soaps from hotels across the country and indeed from around the world. They were in boxes and boxes. She also found that there were boxes of boxes. This may sound Susian, but what it was that every box that had ever entered through the front door never made it back out. They were broken down and neatly stacked in the garage. And as they began to remove them, it was kind of like a geological dig. The further down they went, the older the boxes got. The very bottom there, the boxes were those old, those really good cardboard boxes, you know, that are super sturdy. She had been doing this for years. And there was a good reason behind this. She was born in 1923. And so she grew up during the Depression. And that formed the way that she understood the world around her. That you can't always be sure what will come your way. And so if you find something of use, you hold on to it because you don't know the next time that you're going to need it. Some of you may have come across a book. It's called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Right? It was a number one New York Times bestseller written by Marie Kondo. And in it, she has a whole way of decluttering your home. It's some techniques, but really it's a mindset that she teaches. And this has swept through Japan, across the United States. And one of the foundational understandings is you look at an item in your home and you ask yourself this question: will this propel me forward, or will this hold me to the past? Now, there's been some pushback to Marie Kondo and the attention that she's gotten from people who say that this is a first world problem. And of course, they're right. When you are trying simply to subsist, the challenge of having too many possessions is not what you face. When you're a refugee and you are fleeing violence and you take only what will fit in a suitcase or a pack or a bag, having too many possessions is not your challenge. And yet here we live in the United States in one of the most materially driven cultures on this globe and perhaps ever. And so what we face is real. What Marie Kondo is teaching has truth. And I think she's asking the same question that this woman who was helping to unpack her mother's home was asking. And it's the same question that this 2,000-year-old teaching brings present right here today, right? That was a radically different time and a radically different place, but the question for us remains, what do we do with what we have? What do we do with what we have? This past week, I was introduced to this a book called Giving to God by a scholar named John Allen Powell. And in this, he reminds us that one of the gold standards for marketing is brand identity. Brand identity. And with brand identity, when somebody comes to purchase your product, they're not simply thinking, how well does this work? Is this useful for me? With brand identity, we identify with the product itself. And in a way, it actually then becomes part of our identity. An example of this might be the folks who camp out outside of the Apple store for a day or two or three in advance of the release of a new iPhone. Now, there are some folks, this is their job, right? They camp out to get the phone to sell it. Now, there's other folks, though, they are fanatics. And so they really want to be there. And my guess is they probably own an iPhone already. And it's probably functional. But that's not the point. Another example. Now, this one is probably a little bit more culturally out on a limb. I'll admit that at the start here. But you may have, in your travels, been driving behind a pickup truck and seen in the window a sticker that has the character from the Calvin and Hobbes comic strip, Calvin, you know. And I think that the creator of this comic strip, Bill Waterston, must get heartburn every time he sees this. Because often what you see, let's say it's a Ford truck, you'll see a little Calvin peeing on a Chevy symbol, the Chevy logo. Or if it's a Chevy truck, you'll see Calvin peeing on a Ford logo. Why? Because of this identification. Now me, I myself drive a Dodge Ram pickup. It's a 1500 EcoDiesel 4x4. It gets 27 miles to the gallon on the highway, because it's a diesel, and 22 miles around the city, and can still tow. And there it is. There it is. We get so invested in the possessions that we have, the material goods, that we defend them. We affiliate so strongly that over time, they possess us. And so this teaching from Jesus, where your treasure is, there your heart will also be, is just critical. And Mark Allen Powell reminds us that sometimes we get this wrong. And another way is, where you put your treasure will determine where your heart will end up. Where you put your treasure will determine where your heart ends up. And that is something that Jesus is really concerned with. Right? Because this is just how money works. The budgets we have, whether they're household budgets or church budgets or university budgets or company budgets or the budgets of a nation, every budget is a theological statement. And so I've been wondering this week, why is Jesus teaching us about these purses that don't fail, about this never-ending treasure, and at the same time is telling us to be dressed, be ready, be alert, because the master will be coming. Will your lamps be lit? Will you be ready? Why does he do this? I was in a conversation with a friend who is a godly play teacher. And she was talking about what it's like to teach a class on a Sunday morning. You know, for godly play, you have the classroom, and before a child enters into the classroom, you ask them a question. The door person says, "Are you ready?" And if the child says yes, then they come in. If they're not ready, that's okay. They stay in the hallway until they're ready. and then they come in. And the storyteller then invites them into the circle. Now, what my friend has found out, what I'm thinking other teachers may have found out, what I know to be true for myself, is sometimes people say they're ready, and they're not really ready. But that's okay. The teacher waits and waits and sometimes uses the prayer of three deep breaths. Parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, listen to this. It's a great prayer. The prayer of three deep breaths goes like this. That's one. You do that three more times. It's amazing how that can help you center and be ready. But sometimes that's not enough. Sometimes the kids are so squirrely, or there's all this other stuff going on, and you've got the story, and you want to teach the story, but they're not ready. And so sometimes my friend has to take the story and put it away. Not in a frustrated or an angry or even a disappointed way. It's okay, the story goes away. Because the lesson that day is how important it is to get ready. That's what Jesus is trying to help us see. That in order to come close to this kingdom of God, we've got to be ready. Right? Because the kingdom of God, it is here. We can't buy it. You don't need to build it. It's here. But if we are bound or leased or owned by our possessions, we won't be able to see it. We won't be able to enter it. We will not be able to live in it. Where do you want your heart to be? The circle. The circle is all around us. The teacher awaits. What will it take for you to be ready?